Of all the men in the UFO field today, the name of Dr. J. Allen Hynek tops the list. The former Blue Book investigator for the Air Force and current head of the Astronomy Department at Northwestern University has heard stories about what is hidden at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And when told about the woman in the security section, he said he could sympathize with her situation.
Well, the story has come up a number of times. When I was at Blue Book, I never saw anything in Blue Book relating to it, but then Blue Book was the public relations aspect of things anyway. The story has come up a number of times, but I never was able to substantiate it in any manner that I would call a scientific manner. But now what you tell me now is another additional bit of evidence. I was completely disbelieving the story, and I still disbelieve it, because I, it's my nature not to believe anything unless I have firm evidence. But it's a very interesting thing you say there, and if but there's nothing, you really can't go anyplace, can you? Because even Carr can't divulge those people, because, or if he does, they'll simply deny everything. Because I've had to sign the same sort of, when I was with Blue Book, I had to sign the security arrangement saying that if I ever said anything, I would be prosecuted to the fullest extent. So I'm in the same boat, you see.
Because of his expertise in the field of UFOs, Dr. Hynek is called to the scene of every major UFO sighting. He was summoned to Pascagoula, Mississippi last October, hours after two shipyard workers, Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker, stumbled into a sheriff's office and said they had been taken aboard a flying saucer.
I went down to Pascagoula completely negative, but I worked with those men for quite a while. I listened to tapes that had been taken when they didn't know they were being taped. I saw how Charlie behaved under hypnosis, and finally the lie detector test. All of those things convinced me that he was not making it up. They had had an experience, period.
But you can't determine whether they actually saw a flying saucer or were taken aboard one.
No, I couldn't at all. There's no way that I know of in which we could determine that. Like if you tell me that you dreamt of purple peach trees last night, what can I do about it?
Well, you have to go on the assumption that he is indeed telling the truth.
Well, yeah. You have to then judge by his past reputation, how he's regarded in the community. Would he have any reason to do it? All that sort of thing. So, I just don't know about that. Of course, it fits a pattern. You see, that's not an isolated case. We have a catalog now of well over 800 such cases.
On October 23rd of this year, Charles Hickson, one of the men involved in that incident at Pascagoula, invited WWDC newsman Rudolph Brewington to his home in Goshen, Mississippi. That's just north of Pascagoula. And Hickson recalled his experience.
Last year on October the 16th, in the fall of the year, Calvin Parker and myself, at that time, we were employed by F.B. Walker & Son Shipyard in Pascagoula. And sometime during the day on October 11th, we decided to go fishing after work, something that I do, you know, quite often when I'm not working is fishing. So after we got off work, probably 4:30, I think, we were working 9 hours a day. I came home and to get my fishing gear. And we wouldn't go out in a boat because we were going to the banks of the river and fish from the banks for speckled trout and redfish. So we tried, got our bait, and we got to the river and tried several spots, and the fish didn't seem to be biting. So there was one more spot that we were going to try. In the past, I'd caught fish there a lot of times at the old Shawpeter Shipyard. It's an old abandoned shipyard. So we went back up the river to the old shipyard, and we were fishing from a pier off of a wharf, you might say, on the banks of the river there. And it become dark by that time. We do quite a bit of fishing after dark, you know, down here on that time of the year. So I don't know what attracted my attention, where I had reached around to get more bait, which was sitting behind us, or I heard some kind of zipping-like sound, like air or steam or something escaping from a pipe. And as I turned around, I saw some two blue flashing lights, or either pulsating lights, I'm not sure. And it seemed like it was some type of craft, and it seemed like it was almost down to the ground then. In fact, it seemed to be about a couple of feet, you know, above the ground, and it just hovered there. So Calvin had turned by this time, and he was looking at it too. And really, I didn't know what to do. I was just spellbound there for a few minutes, and then almost immediately, some type of opening appeared in the end that was toward us, with what I assumed to be the front end. And the light that had come outside, it was real bright light. And three things appeared in the doorway of the craft, and they seemed to just glide out of the craft. They never touched the ground. They seemed to just glide across. It must have been 25 or 30 feet from us, or maybe a little further than that. And they came to us, just glided over to us, and two of them took me by the arms from the side, and one took a hold of Calvin, and I seen Calvin go limp, and I didn't know it then, but he had fainted. So they carried me inside the craft, and the light was almost blinding inside. In fact, for about 3 or 4 days, I had something like a bad welding flash in my eyes. And I can't recall, or I can't remember just what was on the inside, simply because the light was so bright that I just couldn't make out what it was. But I didn't see any tables or chairs. And the room seemed to be round. Of course, that could have been because the light seemed to be glowing from the walls and the overhead and the ceiling. But they carried me, what, I guess about middle of the room, and we would just seem to be suspended there. I couldn't move. I didn't have any feelings, no sensation of any feel. And it seemed to something like a big eye. I keep referring to it as an eye because it was about size for a small baseball. In the end, it was focused toward me. It was a different color or a different light. And it seemed to come directly out from the wall, and it came within 6 or 8 inches of my face. And it remained there for a few minutes, and then it, very few minutes, and then it went over my entire body. I'm assuming it did, because when it went down like this, I seemed to be suspended there. And the next time I seen it, it was coming back up over this way. So I assumed that it went over my entire body. But it came back in front of my face and stayed there for a few more minutes, and then it seemed to just go right back into the wall. And these things, the way they were holding me, I was elevated because they weren't as tall as me, and they were upright, and I was elevated like this. And I could see, I could move my eyes, only thing I could move. And I could see that they had released me. And I don't know where they went, whether they went outside the craft or another room or compartment, but they didn't come in front of me. And they left me that way for a few minutes. I don't know how long. And then after a while, I seen them. Then when they come back to the side of me and took hold of me again, and they carried me back outside the craft, and we were still just gliding. I wasn't touching anything that I know of. And they seemed to just glide back out to where they had taken me from and put me back down on the ground. Well, when they did, I fell because my legs were weak and they gave way on me. And it was this time that I seen Calvin again. He was standing there. He was standing facing the river with his arms outstretched, and he was almost in shock. Or he seemed to appear to me at that time something was wrong with him. But so I was trying to make my way toward him, and I was crawling. I couldn't get my legs to working. But before I got to him, the strength of whatever it was came back to my legs, and I was getting up on my feet, and I heard the same sound I'd heard before, a zipping sound. And I glanced around, and I saw the blue flashing lights, and it was, the craft was just gone, just almost instantly. And I made it to Calvin, and I shook him and was calling to him, and it took me several minutes to get him where I could even talk to him, you know, with any sense, and he was going in shock. And these things that came out of the craft, they were about 5 or 5 foot 4 inches tall. And they didn't have a neck. Their The head seemed to come directly to the shoulders, and they had something that resembled a nose on a face, and about where ears would be was something that was similar to the nose, only it was a little longer. It seemed to come out almost to a horn. And under the nose, it was something like a slit for a mouth, and it was very wrinkled. And it appeared to me to be something like an elephant skin, but I don't know where it was, a metal or what it was, but it seemed to be very wrinkled, with the wrinkles running horizontal. And in the area where the eyes should have been, it was so wrinkled that I'm not even sure there was eyes. I can't recall whether there was any eyes or not, and Calvin says he can't. But anyway, after I got Calvin where I could talk to him, we didn't know what to do, and we were almost scared to death. And we first decided we wouldn't tell anyone, but the more we talked about it, the more we realized that we had to tell somebody. If it was the military authorities, if nobody else. So we called Keesler Air Force Base, which is only about, at Biloxi, about 30 miles south of here. And I talked to someone there, and they told me that the Air Force didn't handle those things anymore, that we would have to go through our Sheriff's Department. Well, then we hesitated again because, you know, you go to the people, just something like that is not supposed to happen, and we knew we would probably be laughed at and ridiculed. But we talked it over again and decided we would call the Sheriff's Department, and Sheriff Fred Diamond told us to come on over there, that we'd talk about it. So we stayed there for several hours talking with them and them questioning us. And the sheriff promised me that it wouldn't any news media know anything about it, that he would try to get it to the proper authorities, if he could find out who the proper authorities was, and have it investigated. So we went home that morning, and it was morning because they had kept us there quite late, and with assurance that it wouldn't be any publicity about it at all. Well, we went on to work that morning, and by 7 or 8 o'clock, there was telephones ringing, all over the shipyard. And I called Fred Diamond, and he said that he don't know how the story leaked out from the Sheriff's Department, but that by that time, the whole world knew about it.
You're listening.
You said something that was like an eye ran up and down your body. Do you think it was like examining you?
Yes, it was some. It had to be some type of examination. Well, I say had to be. It appears to me that it would be. And after talking with a lot of scientists, I'm convinced that it was something. It was some type of examination that it gave me.
Did you communicate with these creatures, these things?
No. And the only sound that they made, they didn't attempt to communicate with me. The only sound that they made, one of them, and I'm not even sure it came from one of the things, but it was some kind of mumbling like sound, a low mumbling sound from one of them. But other than that, they didn't try to communicate. I tried to say something to them aboard the craft, but I think now, and I have a reasons to believe, many different reasons to believe, these things were robots. They weren't beings. They were being controlled by beings from somewhere else.
What made you think that, sir?
Well, for as I just mentioned, several reasons. I didn't see any movement of breath in the chest area. I didn't see any movement of breath in the slit of the mouth area. It didn't move. And when they move, they seem to move as something mechanically. They could move their arms like this and in their shoulders, but their head didn't move. And when they move, they seem to turn as if mechanically. It appeared to me that they had something that they were programmed, you might say, to do something. They had something specific to do, and they just simply done it, and their attention wasn't distracted one way or the other.
Did their examination of you hurt you?
No. The only physical pain that I had is when they took hold of me there on the banks of the river. The one that took hold of my left arm, and this arm here, just instantly I felt pain, but it was gone just that quick. And then once aboard the craft, at one time, I felt the same pain in the same area again, but it was just instantly. And that's the only physical pain that I had through the entire thing.
Now, approximately how long do you figure you were in the craft itself?
Well, I'm not sure. because I don't wear a watch. A watch won't keep time on me. And Calvin didn't have a watch. And we've tried to go back and, I've tried to go back and try to figure the time out from the time that we left the air going to call at Keesler Air Force Base and all. And it could have possibly been as long as it could have been anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, and probably even longer than that.
Can you give our listeners some idea of the size of this craft that you were suspended within?
Well, the craft, let me explain now. The angle that I was looking toward the craft, it's hard for me to say, which I can't say, whether the craft was round like a disc or whether it was long or oblong like a cigar. Because it was, let me give you an example. Like the craft was sitting here. We're assuming that this is the front end of it. That was the end that was toward us. Well, I'm looking at it from this angle. So all I can see is what is this side and what I'm assuming to be the front, and maybe it's a little bit of the back. So I can't be sure whether the craft was round like a disc or was long or oblong. But it appeared to me that it was about 30 or 40 foot long and maybe 8 or 10 foot high.
Charles Hickson takes a closer look at that flying saucer in just a moment. Of all the men in the UFO field today, the name of Dr. J. Allen Hynek tops the list. The former Blue Book investigator for the Air Force and current head of the Astronomy Department at Northwestern University has heard stories about what is hidden at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And when told about the woman in the security section, he said he could sympathize with her situation.
Well, the story has come up a number of times. When I was at Blue Book, I never saw anything in Blue Book relating to it, but then Blue Book was the public relations aspect of things anyway. The story has come up a number of times, but I never was able to substantiate it in any manner that I would call a scientific manner. But now what you tell me now is another additional bit of evidence. I was completely disbelieving the story, and I still disbelieve it, because I just my nature not to believe anything unless I have firm evidence. But it's a very interesting thing you say there, and but there's nothing, you really can't go anyplace, can you? Because even Carr can't divulge those people, because, or if he does, they'll simply deny everything. Because I've had to sign the same sort of, when I was with Blue Book, I had to sign the security arrangement saying that if I ever said anything, I would be prosecuted to the fullest extent. So I'm in the same boat, you see.
Because of his expertise in the field of UFOs, Dr. Hynek is called to the scene of every major UFO sighting. He was summoned to Pascagoula, Mississippi last October, hours after two shipyard workers, Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker, stumbled into a sheriff's office and said they had been taken aboard a flying saucer.
I went down to Pascagoula completely negative, but I worked with those men for quite a while. I listened to tapes that had been taken when they didn't know they were being taped. I saw how Charlie behaved under hypnosis, and finally the lie detector test. All of those things convinced me that he was not making it up. They had had an experience, period.
But you can't determine whether they actually saw a flying saucer or were taken aboard one.
No, I couldn't at all. There's no way that I know of in which we could determine that. It's like if you tell me that you dreamt of purple peach trees last night. What can I do about it?
Well, you have to go on the assumption that he is indeed telling the truth.
Well, yeah. You have to then judge by his past reputation, how he's regarded in the community. Would he have any reason to do it? All that sort of thing. So, I just don't know about that. Of course, it fits a pattern. You see, that's not an isolated case. We have a catalog now of well over 800 such cases.
On October 23rd of this year, Charles Hickson, one of the men involved in that incident at Pascagoula, invited WWDC newsman Rudolph Brewington to his home in Goshen, Mississippi. That's just north of Pascagoula. And Hickson recalled his experience.
Last year on October the 16th, in the fall of the year, Calvin Parker and myself, at that time we were employed by F.B. Walker & Son Shipyard in Pascagoula. And sometime during the day on October 11th, we decided to go fishing after work, something that I do, you know, quite often when I'm not working is fishing. So after we got off work, probably 4:30, I think, we were working 9 hours a day. I came home and to get my fishing gear, and we wouldn't go out in a boat because we were going to the banks of the river and fish from the banks for speckled trout and redfish. So we tried, got our bait, and we got to the river and tried several spots, and the fish didn't seem to be biting. So there was one more spot that we were going to try. In the past, I'd caught fish there a lot of times at the old Shawpeter Shipyard. It's an old abandoned shipyard. So we went back up the river to the old shipyard, and we were fishing from a pier off of a wharf, you might say, on the banks of the river there. And it become dark by that time. We do quite a bit of fishing after dark, you know, down here in that time of the year. So I don't know what attracted my attention, where I had reached around to get more bait, which was sitting behind us, or I heard some kind of zipping-like sound, like air or steam or something escaping from a pipe. And as I turned around, I saw some two blue flashing lights, or either pulsating lights, I'm not sure. And it seemed like it was some type of craft, and it seemed like it was almost down to the ground then. In fact, it seemed to be about a couple of feet, you know, above the ground, and it just hovered there. So Calvin had turned by this time, and he was looking at it too. And really, I didn't know what to do. I was just spellbound there for a few minutes. And then almost immediately, some type of opening appeared in the end that was toward us, with what I assumed to be the front end. And the light that had come outside, it was real, real bright light. And three things appeared in the doorway of the craft, and they seemed to just glide out of the craft. They never touched the ground. They seemed to just glide across. It must have been 25 or 30 feet from us, or maybe a little further than that. And they came to us, just glided over to us, and two of them took me by the arms from the side, and one took a hold of Calvin, and I seen Calvin go limp, and I didn't know it then, but he had fainted. So they carried me inside the craft, and the light was almost blinding inside. In fact, for about 3 or 4 days, I had something like a bad welding flash in my eyes. And I can't remember just what was on the inside, simply because the light was so bright that I just couldn't make out what it was. But I didn't see any tables or chairs. And the room seemed to be round. Of course, that could have been because the light seemed to be glowing from the walls and the overhead and the ceiling. But they carried me, about the middle of the room, and we would just seem to be suspended there. I couldn't move. I didn't have any feelings, no sensation of any feel. And it seemed something like a big eye. I keep referring to it as an eye because it was about size for a small baseball. In the end, it was focused toward me. It was a different color or a different light. And it seemed to come directly out from the wall, and it came within 6 or 8 inches of my face. And it remained there for a few minutes, and then it, very few minutes, and then it went over my entire body. I'm assuming it did, because when it went down like this, I seemed to be suspended there. And the next time I seen it, it was coming back up over this way. So I assumed that it went over my entire body. Well, it came back in front of my face and stayed there for a few more minutes, and then it seemed to just go right back into the wall. And these things, the way they were holding me, I was elevated because they weren't as tall as me, and they were upright, and I was elevated like this. And I could see, I could move my eyes, only thing I could move. And I could see that they had released me. And I don't know where they went, whether they went outside the craft or another room or compartment, but they didn't come in front of me. And they left me that way for for a few minutes. I don't know how long. And then after a while, I seen them. Then when they come back to the side of me and took hold of me again, and they carried me back outside the craft, and we were still just gliding. I wasn't touching anything that I know of. And they seemed to just glide back out to where they had taken me from and put me back down on the ground. Well, when they did, I fell because my legs were weak and they gave way on me. And it was this time that I seen Calvin again. He was standing there. He was standing facing the river with his arms outstretched, and he was almost in shock. Or he seemed to appear to me at that time something was wrong with him. But so I was trying to make my way toward him, and I was crawling. I couldn't get my legs to working. But before I got to him, the strength of whatever it was came back to my legs, and I was getting up on my feet, and I heard the same sound I'd heard before, a zipping sound. And I glanced around, and I saw the blue flashing lights, and it was, the craft was just gone, just almost instantly. And I made it to Calvin, and I shook him and was calling to him, and it took me several minutes to get him where I could even talk to him, you know, with any sense, and he was going in shock. And these things that came out of the craft, they were about 5 or 5'4" tall, and they didn't have a neck. The head seemed to come directly to the shoulders, and they had something that resembled a nose on a face, and about where ears would be was something that was similar to the nose, only it was a little longer. They seemed to come out almost to a horn. And under the nose, it was something like a slit for a mouth, and it was very wrinkled. And it appeared to me to be something like an elephant skin, but I don't know where it was, a metal or what it was, but it seemed to be very wrinkled, with the wrinkles running horizontal. And in the area where the eyes should have been, it was so wrinkled that I'm not even sure there was eyes. I can't recall whether there was any eyes or not, and Calvin says he can't. But anyway, after I got Calvin where I could talk to him, we didn't know what to do, and we were almost scared to death. And we first decided we wouldn't tell anyone, but the more we talked about it, the more we realized that we had to tell somebody. If it was the military authorities, if nobody else, so we called Keesler Air Force Base, which is only about, it blocks you about 30 miles south of here. And I talked to someone there, and they told me that the Air Force didn't handle those things anymore, that we would have to go through our Sheriff's Department. Well, then we hesitated again because, you know, you go to the people, just something like that is not supposed to happen, and when you would probably be laughed at and ridiculed. But we talked it over again and decided we would call the Sheriff's Department, and Sheriff Fred Diamond told us to come on over there, that we'd talk about it. So we stayed there for several hours talking with them and them questioning us. And the sheriff promised me that it wouldn't any news media know anything about it, that he would try to get it to the proper authorities if he could find out who the proper authorities was and have it investigated. So we went home that morning, and it was morning because they had kept us there quite late, and with assurance that it wouldn't be any publicity about it at all. Well, we went on to work that morning, and by 7 or 8 o'clock, there was telephones ringing, all over the shipyard, and I called Fred Diamond, and he said that he don't know how the story leaked out from the Sheriff's Department, but that by that time the whole world knew about it.
You're listening.
You said something that was like an eye ran up and down your body. Do you think it was like examining you?
Yes, it was some. It had to be some type of examination. Well, I say had to be. It appears to me that it would be. And after talking with a lot of scientists, I'm convinced that it was something. It was some type of examination that it gave me.
Did you communicate with these creatures, these things?
No, and the only sound that they made, they didn't attempt to communicate with me. The only sound that they made, one of them, and I'm not even sure it came from one of the things, but it was some kind of mumbling-like sound, a low mumbling sound from one of them. But other than that, they didn't try to communicate. I tried to say something to them aboard the craft, but it I think now, and I have a reasons to believe, many different reasons to believe, these things were robots. They weren't beings. They were being controlled by beings from somewhere else.
What made you think that, sir?
Well, for as I just mentioned, several reasons. I didn't see any movement of breath in the chest area. I didn't see any movement of breath in the slit of the mouth here. It didn't move. And when they move, they seem to move as something mechanically. They could move their arms like this and in their shoulders, but their head didn't move. And when they move, they seem to turn as if mechanically. It appeared to me that they had something that they were programmed, you might say, to do something. They had something specific to do, and they just simply done it, and their attention wasn't distracted one way or the other.
Did their examination of you hurt you?
No. The only physical pain that I had is when they took hold of me there on the banks of the river. The one that took hold of my left arm, and this arm here, just instantly I felt pain, but it was gone just that quick. And then once aboard the craft, at one time, I felt the same pain in the same area again, but it was just instantly. And that's the only physical pain that I had through the entire thing.
Now, approximately how long do you figure you were in the craft itself?
Well, I'm not sure, because I don't wear a watch. A watch won't keep time on me. And Calvin didn't have a watch. And we've tried to go back, I've tried to go back and try to figure the time out from the time that we left the air going to call at Keesler Air Force Base and all. And it could have possibly been as long as it could have been anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And probably even longer than that.
Can you give our listeners some idea of the size of this craft that you were suspended within?
Well, the craft, let me explain now. The angle that I was looking toward the craft, it's hard for me to say, which I can't say, whether the craft was round like a disc or whether it was long or oblong like a cigar. Because it was, let me give you an example. Like the craft was sitting here. We're assuming that this is the front end of it. That was the end that was toward us. Well, I'm looking at it from this angle, so all I can see is what is this side and what I'm assuming to be the front, and maybe it's a little bit of the back. So I can't be sure whether the craft was round like a disc or was long or oblong. But it appeared to me that it was about 30 or 40 foot long and maybe 8 or 10 foot high.
Charles Hickson takes a closer look at that flying saucer in just a moment.